I'm Theo Greenlee, a reporter with the Alaska Desk. That's a joint reporting effort from Alaska Public Media and KUCB, where I work in on Alaska, and other public radio stations in Anchorage, Fairbanks, Haines, and the Aleutians. It allows us to connect you with the issues happening in communities all across the state. You can hear our stories during the morning news, Alaska News Nightly, or online at alaskapublic.org. The Alaska Desk is only possible with the support of grants and listeners like you. Thank you.
Coming up on Hometown Alaska, host Dave Waldron sits down with Matthew Bertner, a composer, sound artist, and eco-acoustician. We'll hear about his recent Canadian exhibition and his newest album titled Profiled from Atmospheres. This episode previously aired in September, but was missed due to special coverage. And on State of Art, join me, Ammon Swenson, for a conversation with local musician Dawson Gentleman. We'll hear about his new batch of acoustic music and making a name for himself in the Anchorage scene after cutting his teeth in Fairbanks. He also gives us an in-studio performance of a new song. That's all coming up next on Hometown Alaska from Alaska Public Media.
Welcome to Hometown Alaska. I'm Dave Waldron. Well, we've all heard sounds in nature that capture our ears, whether it's a bird call, a gentle stream, or a thunderstorm. But what about other sounds? What noise does a glacier make, or the tundra? And are they musical like those bird calls? Are they chaotic or strange? My guest today is the perfect person to ask these questions. Matthew Bertner is a composer, sound artist, and eco-acoustician. More on that last one later. He's fresh off a Canadian exhibition as well as a new album titled Profiled from Atmospheres, which we'll be listening to later on the show. Matthew, welcome to Hometown Alaska.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
It's great to have you. We have a lot to talk about, but before we do, please clarify that very cool job title of yours, eco-acoustician. What is that?
Oh, well, I'm working with environmental systems that are projected into sound or sounding themselves. So for me, ecoacoustics is kind of a three-part field. It's field recording, so sounds from nature that we can hear a sound, or sounds that we can't hear, like out of our range of hearing. Also sonification, which would be turning data into sound. Some things don't make sound, but they can be heard if you translate them, and then performance with natural materials, which is a kind of human nature interaction, playing the natural materials like the snow or the tundra and discovering the relationships by activating them.
You've gotten really good at explaining that. I'm sure you've done this at parties before.
it's real popular.
Like, what do you do? Have you met another eco-acoustician before by chance, like at a party?
Yeah, eco-acoustics is a emerging field, but there's a lot of people working on it. It's actually comes out of the sciences first. And back in the 90s, when I was trying to figure out like what kind of music I was working on, I discovered eco-acoustic science, which was being described as something that used emerging technology and then applied that to environmental sciences research. And it seemed to match what I was interested in doing. And so I started calling that work eco-acoustic music. Since then, you know, there are more eco-acoustic musicians and a whole field of environmental humanities that's like there's scholarship around eco-acoustics now. So it's really quite expansive field and really wonderful to be connecting the science, the art, and the humanities scholarship.
And why do you think it is trending in the way it is? Why are we hearing more about it now?
Well, I think that people are more aware of changes in the environment and concerned about those changes. Why are they happening? What does it mean for our relationship to, you know, one another? And so it really becomes part of like a human drama. We're also aware of, you know, anthropogenic changes in the environment, like the extinctions crisis and all the things, and animals and plants and forests and things that we care about are also caught up in this. And so these dramas are concerning to people. And so, you know, I think more young people are interested in working on the environment, and particularly how humans relate to the environment. So that might be one reason. I think just people who are in general out there are recognizing that fields like music, you know, where we might have listened to love songs before, you know, between people, like amorous relationships between people or breakup songs, you know, we're kind of applying that same kind of emotional connection to aspects of our changing world. We are in a relationship with our environment, and we may be in a breakup song with it.
Yes, we know a lot about breakup here in Alaska. Well, tell me about your music background. How did you find your first, you know, your first instrument? And we'll talk about how that led into what you do today later.
Yeah, well, you know, I was born here in Alaska, and I started playing music here. My mom was a piano teacher, so she taught my brothers and I piano when we were pretty young. And then as quick as possible, I changed to a different instrument, which was, in my case, the saxophone, which is a very portable instrument. I've actually taken the saxophone with me all around the world and played it, and it's very portable. So when I was growing up, I would play outside very often. And for me, music happening alongside natural sounds was very natural. It felt comfortable to have the wind blowing and then you're playing and other people can't really hear you. It's kind of masking you, but it's also more than that. There's like a dialogue between these environmental sounds and the sounds that you can produce as a musician.
I love that description of your music as a dialogue with nature. I think that's super cool. How do you dialogue with nature? What's the conversation like? And who talks first?
Right. That's a really interesting topic, you know, because I've actually written an article about this. I had an experience a few years ago out on the Harding Ice Field where I took my saxophone out there and I played with the ice field. And there's a YouTube video of that music video that people can watch if they want. But I planned that composition without really knowing what I was going to experience out on the ice field. It's a vast place. And I had an airplane drop me off and I just stayed out there, brought, you know, microphones. I put microphones like buried in the ice field and played my saxophone and recorded the saxophone kind of filtered through the ice field.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And then I put microphones in my saxophone and recorded the natural sounds of the environment through the saxophone, trying to kind of bring together the two instruments, so to speak. And then really considering, like, how is it possible that a human could perform with the environment? You know, what does that even mean? It seems, on the one hand, kind of ridiculous to think, because the ice field's not obviously listening to the saxophone. And, you know, the ice field is, meanwhile, very impressive to the musician who's there. But then if you start expanding the kind of the framework and don't think of the person or the musician as just this one person, but rather like the whole species, then it starts taking on a different meaning, because actually the ice field does know us, right? It knows us. It knows us from the chemistry of the precipitation. It knows us from the changes in the temperature. It knows us, you know, through the many glaciers that come off that ice field. It knows not me personally, but our species. And it understands changes like that. And at the same time, then, you know, we can understand the cryosphere and how that's all working in dialogue with humans. So when you're in that kind of a situation, like you're playing your saxophone outside, I mean, it seems very insignificant. But when you start thinking about it as like you're a representative of humans, then it takes on a really different kind of relationship. What are you going to do? What notes are you going to play? You know, it's not just, it just takes on more significance, I think. So this question of like, who plays first, how does that happen? I think it has to evolve, right? So like, I was very familiar with the ice and the snow when I went onto the Harding Ice Field. But I've also done this in places where I didn't have the kind of depth of knowledge that I do of this place, Alaska. For example, I work with seagrass meadows on the eastern shore of the U.S. And I, you know, I don't have a lot of experience with that kind of coastal ecology and those particular seagrasses. So it starts really by listening, I think. So, you know, you have to learn about how you can fit into the ecology, the sound ecology, not just kind of like playing, you know, your licks right over the top of the,
Maybe this will sound cool. I guess we'll find out later.
Yeah. And it might mean that you don't play anything for a long time, right? You might just go out and like, you might just be listening and you might feel like, well, I don't really have anything to offer yet. You know, it might take some time. Because the time doesn't work the same in the environment. Environmental temporalities can be well outside of the scale of our perception and our concern.
As a composer, it sounds like you do maybe more listening than the average composer, as much as you are writing your own stuff, right? This input is important to your process.
Yeah, particularly for me, because I'm like a conceptual sound artist. So I'm like a conceptual artist. So I think about... You know, a lot of pre-composition is about developing the idea of the piece. Before any notes are made, there has to be like a kind of concrete concept there. The notes that are included in the music are really the result of that concept as much as they are, you know, something that you listen to.
It sounds like a really fun job. I'm just envisioning you on this glacier with your saxophone. We actually have an Indie Alaska on this. If our listeners want to go check it out, we did an Indie Alaska on you and your work, and you are on a glacier at one point. Actually, you know, there's one part where you're thumping the snow and making like a beat with the thump, thump, thump of the snow as well, which I remember being very cool. Well, when did you realize you had this unique relationship with sound, not only just music as you hear it, but the sound that you hear in the natural world? Was there a sound that initially caught your ear where you're like, that's not just nature, that's music I'm hearing?
You know, it was more of like a feeling than a particular sound. And, you know, the environment of Alaska is very impressive, as many of your listeners will know. Yeah. You know, when you, it's intense, and the sounds can be intense as well. Like, you know, if you go outside into a windstorm, a blizzard or something, or you're on the boat and the waves are crashing. I mean, these are massively impressive sounds. And they're impressive, you know, the way that like rock is impressive. Like when you first hear like a rock concert, it's just like the bass and the distortion. You're just like, whoa, that's amazing. Like I didn't know that sound could be like that. To me, it was like the environment was like that. It was like I listened to music. And then I'd go outside and I'd be like, wow, this is way more impressive than the music I was listening to, you know, just that, like just on the sheer kind of like power of it. It's just like more moving. And, you know, that was before I went to a rock concert. But, you know, music can approach that. I'm not sure, you know, because of the duration and there's other aspects of the environmental sound that are certainly more intense than any music created by humans. But it is, you know, that kind of feeling that drew me to it. It's like, how can music be moving like the environment is moving?
Yeah, and nature's been at it longer than, you know, most rock bands as well. So there's something to be said there. Let's talk about one of your other most recent performances, your live performance. You had one that happened in Canada titled Thaw, and it combined your music with a massive chunk of ice and aerial acrobatics happening on top of said chunk of ice. So it seemed like a pretty huge undertaking. How did that collaboration happen?
That was like a really, it's really quite an amazing thing. I'm very proud of Thaw and really honored to be a part of that piece. It's a big production by an Australian theater company called Legs on the Wall. And they contacted me and proposed this, that they wanted to have aerial dancers flying on an iceberg that was suspended by a crane above the ocean or something. And I was just like, whatever. I didn't write them back.
Like, I didn't. Oh, that's not the response I thought.
I did not respond to them. I was like, this is, you know, these guys are Australian. Like, I don't know. They're just dreaming up weird stuff down there. And like, this is too expensive. It's too dangerous. They're never going to get funding. They're like, you know, I just didn't think it was possible. And they kept on writing me. And then finally I wrote them and had a discussion with them. And they were for real. Like, it was actually like a real thing. And they're just a very cool theater company that's like doing all sorts of public activism work, you know, and they do a lot of this kind of pieces where they, you know, scale buildings or they do something out in public. And this is like their thing. So they had imagined an iceberg and sound coming out of the iceberg and dancers flying around on it. And so so we started working on that project. And it was just awesome that it was presented by the Luminato Festival in Toronto. It's a piece that runs for 8 hours a day for 3 days. So it's like a durational piece of environmental sound theater work. And the speakers are like around the listening space or the visual space. And then the crane orchestrates the movement of this, it's like a 3-ton block of ice.
Yeah.
So it's not a real iceberg. They make it in a freezer container. So they have a steel skeleton substructure and the form, and they pour the water into the form and then freeze it. They make four of them. They make one for each day and one extra in case one breaks. So
right. They
have a huge freezer container and then a crane, and they make four of these things. And then the thing goes up, and there are different dancers. Each dancer takes 3 hours on the ice.
Wow.
And the theater company developed these amazing characters. They're all like human characters related to kind of different perceptions of global warming. Like, one of the characters is like a businessman who doesn't care at all. He's like going to try to profit on the fact that like Canada's going to be a tropical paradise and they're going to create condos. And so he's up there like, you know, on cell phone calls and like, you know, and then he jumps around. It's amazing. Then there's another one who's like a kind of activist, you know, who's like fight, 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 and like burns a torch and like sets out a flag and is just really like trying to struggle. But she is also trapped on the ice, you know, and can't really make any change as the ice is melting. And then there's this other character who's like trying to embody the spirit of the ice and like come to terms with it. She's like trying to invite people up onto the ice. And so it was a very interesting project. It's not something I would have thought of, that kind of theatrical approach. But what I did was, you know, I knew that they were going to put this iceberg up on the crane in a hot place. It's been played in Australia, Tasmania, New Zealand, London, a couple other places in Europe, and then Toronto. And anyway, the whole point of it is that the ice melts. Knowing that that was the plan, I went to the Arctic to record a super cold sound. And I thought, for the music, I'm going to write the music for the ice. Like, this is going to be this super cold music that is going to give the ice the best chance of like surviving in this scenario. And so I went up there out of Kaktovik and out onto the Arctic Ocean and found this kind of amazing, it's like hoarfrost, we call it. It's like when these ice crystals like grow up out of the ice. Mm-hmm. And I made a very special field recording where I like broke off one of those crystals, and then I would like bow the other crystals with it with this really sensitive microphone. And it's like, you know, -20 or something, you know, so it was as cold as a sound as I could make, you know. It's just like this very high kind of hissing frozen sound. And I made the music out of that. And so this was like, you know, the concept embedded in it was that, you know, there's going to be this kind of theater of human action around climate change, but, you know, I'm going to compose for the ice. And so really that's what happened with that piece. But it was awesome in Canada. And it was fun for me because that performance was the first time that I got to see the work live. and meet the dancers and meet the directors. And it was just really, it was actually really powerful to see it live. I thought it was cool before just looking at the pictures, but it's kind of riveting. Like you can't, we should get this to come to Anchorage, by the way. Like we should have this piece in Anchorage because this is like, I think Alaskans would love it. And it's impressive to experience live. Like I didn't want to leave. And I know that it's like my piece and I'm close to it, but I don't think that was it. Like there are people who stay for the whole 8 hours. Like you can't,
wow.
You just don't want to walk away. And also you fill up your phone. You take all these pictures. Like, you can't stop taking pictures. It's, like, the most photogenic piece ever.
Right, just, like, shining so, in the sun, this iceberg.
Yeah.
You know? Well, it's time for us to take a short break. When we return, we'll be listening to some of those songs off the newest record from Matthew Berdner, titled Profiled from Atmospheres. I'm Dave Waldron, and you're listening to Hometown Alaska on Alaska Public Media. Welcome back to Hometown Alaska. I'm Dave Waldron, and today we're exploring the connection between music and nature with Matthew Berdner. He's a composer and eco-acoustician, someone who makes music based on the sounds of our environment. And his newest album is titled Profiled from Atmospheres, and we're going to play some of it for you right now. This first track is titled Arbor Trunk. So Matthew, explain to us what we're hearing there. I can pick out the strings and what sounds like maybe wind in the background, but there's that grinding or squeaking sound in there. What is that?
So this is a really interesting and special field recording. So yes, string quartet, that's right. There's a string quartet playing, and this is actually a dance work. So I wrote this music for a dance company called Time Lapse Dance, and the choreographer, Jody Sperling, came to Alaska to visit us. And when I was in residence at the Anchorage Museum, we did a performance there at the Anchorage Museum. But we were mostly doing field work. So she came up, and we went back into the Chugach, and it was the winter. Well, it was spring, but there's a lot of snow on the trees. And, you know, I showed her how the hemlock trees kind of gnarl down from the wind growing up in these really windy climates. And then they create these kind of like forms that the snow support the snow. And you can kind of go down under the tree and you can climb up on top of the snowbank and look around over the forest. And so I thought that we should really think of the substructure of the tree. So I wanted to record the roots. And so I tunneled down under there and dug this little like hole in the ground and put the microphones down inside, down by the roots of this tree under the snow. And then she went up on top of the tree and started like, I don't know, dancing, I guess, like swinging around and like moving the tree just by, she'd hold onto it and kind of move it and the snow falling down. And I recorded that, and that's this kind of like, it's like this low kind of crunching sound, but also this like squeaking sound of the snow, because it was cold enough then, I guess, that we were getting that kind of snow squeaking. ¶¶
I can tell you love to collaborate. You're already collaborating with nature every day and working on the dance performance as well. Is that one of your favorite things about being a musician and your work is working with others to make something different, I guess?
I really think that this is a key, not just that it's important that we be collaborating on the issues that are so intractable for our time that can't be solved by any one person, but it's also kind of like in the ethos of Alaska, you know? Like we often have this kind of view of Alaska as being, you know, the kind of man alone in the wilderness kind of approach. And but in my experience, it's much more community-based and collaboratively driven than that. People don't last very long, you know, in the extreme environment without like teaming up with others, you know, who have different knowledge sets. So I really do, and I've always liked collaborating, particularly with, well, you collaborate with people who bring something different than you to the project. So, you know, sharing knowledge and then working on things together. So, yeah, the theater company, the dance company, the scientists, all these collaborations are very important to me, not to mention just every single like environmental system that I'm working with, the ice field and the northern lights and the tree. But yeah, definitely it's like as I go forward, I keep thinking more and more about how important it is that we create collaborative teams to address these problems. You know, like science has given us a lot of evidence to address climate change and point it out to us. And it really has not really changed anything from basic kind of human perspective. And why is that? You know, well, it's because you don't, it has to be part of an effort that crosses over like multiple fields of thought, you know, and it really needs to be connected to the arts and it needs to be connected to humanistic and ethical inquiry. It needs to be connected to politics, you know, and all the things, technology. I mean, really, it all has to come together. So, you know, I think that that's where I'm more aware of that kind of in the foreground of my thinking on this now. But it did evolve pretty naturally, I think.
Well, climate change is obviously important to your music. It was on your album, Glacier Music, that you made. And then, of course, the Thaw Project. What is the theme, if any, on this new album, this Profiled from Atmospheres album?
Well, all the pieces on the album deal with the atmosphere in some way. There's kind of like very direct pieces like Peace for Northern Sky or Profiled from Atmospheres or Windrose. And then there's really kind of upper atmosphere like auroras. And then there's music like Nocturne, which is a moth music. So thinking of like vibration in the atmosphere and different ways of knowing our atmosphere. The moths don't hear in the same range as us. They listen to ultrasonic sounds. And so it's like we can't really have a direct conversation with a moth, but in this piece, we do. and then Arbor, which is really more, it's focused on trees, forests and trees, but, you know, it kind of imagines the forest as a, you know, respiratory part of the atmosphere and the ecology of it.
You talked about turning data into music, right? How do you do that? How do you feature an element of nature in music that does not make noise? Like, how would you do that with the sun?
Well, auroras is a piece that does that, right? The sun is creating these solar winds that project off the sun as electromagnetic energy. And luckily, our Earth has a magnetosphere that protects us from most of that. Some planets don't. It dips in at the poles, the positive and negative. So we get these, you know, these manifestations of the northern lights. Luckily, we don't hear the sun, because if we did, we would live on a planet that was like destroying our ears all the time. It's so loud. There's so much energy coming off
the
sun.
Yeah, true, yeah.
But there's no elastic medium between the sun and the Earth. So there's no way for the sound wave to propagate to reach us, which is good for us because we can hear other things.
Yeah.
But anyway, the auroras piece, actually, it's kind of a mix between field recording and sonification. We call it audification in the field because it takes a parameter that you can't hear, like this electromagnetism, and it just directly converts it into sound. And the amazing thing about the Northern Lights is that they actually, like, the wavelengths are low frequency. They happen in the range of human hearing, but they're, you know, electromagnetism. So all you have to do with the circuit is run the real-time waveform across an audio circuit and listen to it. So that's a kind of audification. It's like data from the sun, but something that you can listen to.
So you're literally just tweaking the frequency of this data to make it audible for our ears,
right? Not even changing the frequency.
Oh, you're not even changing the frequency.
No, just putting it in headphones.
Okay.
And like, like
even better.
You know, you just, the only trick with that is that this device, this recorder that picks up the electromagnetic energy also picks up other electromagnetic energy. So, you know, it'll hear lights and, you know, buildings, electrical signals. It'll hear power lines. So if you really want to listen to the Northern Lights, you have to be at least 3 miles away from any electrical source. So that's kind of fun, right? You challenge, you get to go on a hike.
And what was it like to hear those sounds for the first time when you did put it through the right processors and everything?
It was really amazing, actually, because first of all, they don't sound like they look. Mm. You know, I mean, we just kind of think of the Northern Lights as, I don't know, they're just so smooth and spectacularly beautiful and colorful and
swooshy.
Yeah, swooshy. Like it's like really like a fast lava lamp or something, and you know, mellow. And
yeah.
But actually, they're not. They don't sound like that at all. They sound much noisier and crackly and pulsing and popping. And after listening to them for a while, now I don't look at the Northern Lights in the same way. I see the patterns that I can hear that I didn't notice before I was listening to them. But now when I see it, it's like, oh, there's that like weird strobing that it's doing, you know, that I saw before as a swoosh, but actually it looks like a strobe.
So let's go ahead and listen to that track, Aurora Now. So, Matthew, that sound that starts off, not what I expected Aurora to sound like as well. It's got like a radio static feeling to it, and then it blends into this orchestral, deep pulsing movement there. What happened in that transition there?
So we start off listening to just the Northern Lights, right? So just the VLF recorder, what it picks up directly from the atmosphere. And then I start combining those, like layering those sounds. There's like a lot of different kinds of sounds, those kind of high sweeping frequencies and these kind of crackling static. And then there's all sorts of interesting energy in that sound. And I wanted to make that a little more legible as music. So as the piece goes on, it starts kind of abstracting the energy from the Northern Lights. That is, removing the noise but keeping the amplitude profile and the signal energy, and then using that data to then play synthesizers. That's where that low sound comes from, that low drone sound.
Well, I want to play one more song from the album. This track is titled Profile from Atmosphere, 1959. And you end the album with this song 4 different ways. So it's like the same title, but with a different year on the end of it. So like 1959, 1975, or, you know,
yeah.
What was the significance of that? Why did you do that?
Well, this piece takes the data from the most potent greenhouse gases in the atmosphere and gives them each a note based on their relative presence in the atmosphere at these specific years.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So 1959, I took the, you know, the greenhouse gases of that year, and 1987. And the harmony, the tonality of that movement is in that atmosphere. And then I go to 2015 and then project into 2050. And so the piece kind of moves past us and it projects the greenhouse gases in the atmosphere in 2050, which is, you know, fast approaching.
Not that far away.
Yeah. And so, you know, it's a sonification in a way. The harmonic system's a sonification of the atmosphere. And then the musicians play music that's freely composed in that harmonic framework.
So are you making each song longer or are you adding more to each song as the years go by?
It's really more about the pitches and the changes. Yeah.
Well, let's take a listen to that and we'll see. This is Profiled from Atmospheres, 1959. So you can hear after that clean, kind of rhythmic intro, there's this element of dissonance that comes in, and it's a little less rhythmic, I guess, and with the saxophone. Is that you playing there?
No, that's actually not me. This was commissioned by a duo, percussion and saxophone duo, and so they perform that piece. We hear at the beginning of the movements, we hear the four chords, the 4 years. So we can kind of, the piece lays out just very starkly, here are the harmonies of the 4 years we're comparing the greenhouse gases.
Ah, I see.
And then 1959 starts. So at the beginning, the first, those chords you hear, the four chords repeated, that's the overall big picture. And then we launch into the, you know, dun, 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 dun. That's the 1959, that would be the first chord. Now it's a whole kind of exposition of that world.
I see. So the saxophone, that's not the greenhouse gases, though, is it? Because isn't that the other sound behind it?
Well, they're all playing. So we have, I mean, we have carbon dioxide, methane, and nitrous oxide. They're
Those
all
are
characters.
Different instruments?
Yeah, they're all different characters in this piece, and they're different, you know, balances, and they have different global warming potential. Like each of those gases has a different effect. So... yeah, they're all in that movement.
I'm just curious, what's your favorite reaction you've ever gotten after someone has heard your music before?
Well, I'm always very happy when people listen to my music and, you know, very grateful that they have any reaction at all. But I have to say that, like, lately I've been engaged with the science community more than I was in the past and performing my music in science contexts for the scientists and for the communities of people who are, you know, interested and engaged with the research. So... I'll tell you about one time I was, so just like, I guess 2 years ago, I went to the NSF Long-Term Ecological Research Conference in California and gave a performance of some of these pieces that deal with long-term ecological data and present them as music. And so I was preparing this concert as kind of like a solo show. And so I was telling people about it and people heard about it. It was coming up. I was at the conference also attending papers and, you know, listening. And then as I went through the week, then people were like, hey, I brought my violin. You know, I'm a musician. Do you want me to play in your concert? You know, and then, hey, you know, this guy has like a flute and I think he brought his flute. Like, so it turned out that in the science community, there are all these musicians. right? There's like,
oh no.
Yeah, like all these people playing music and really like interested in art. And so I said, we're going to have a rehearsal. I went back to my hotel room and wrote a score for the Dreams of Seagrasses that didn't have an instrumental part at all. It was just a sonification. But I wrote music for it and then went to the rehearsal and gave it to the musicians. And then we played the concert together. It was this like realization that the new researchers are very keen to be involved in creative work and in hardcore science. Like they want to do both things. They want to be participating in the science communication and in the science creation, and they want to be involved in aesthetics and but have that informed by real issues of our time. And it was that, like, I think I realized in that reception of that piece where the work should go going forward, that it was really going to be about like finding a convergence between science and music and really enlisting both fields as equal participants.
Well, I want to thank my guest, Matthew Burtner. He's a composer and eco-acoustician. Now you all know what that is. His latest album, Profiled from Atmospheres, is streaming wherever you listen to music. Thanks for coming in, Matthew.
Thank you so much for having me. It's great to talk to you, Dave.
Thank you. After this short break, we'll be back with State of Art. I'm your host, Dave Waldron, and you're listening to Hometown Alaska on Alaska Public Media.
From Alaska Public Media, this is State of Art. Welcome to State of Art, your weekly dose of Anchorage arts and culture. I'm Ammon Swenson. Coming up, we hear from Anchorage musician Dawson Gentleman. Aside from having the best name ever, he's a young but veteran musician originally from Fairbanks. He moved here in the summer of 2024 and has been working hard to make a name for himself in the local music scene, both as a solo artist and in a full band. He recently released an acoustic EP called 2015.
Yeah, there is nothing special about me, and there's not a damn thing going on inside my head. Then I see
my dad and my stepmom. Growing up, we've actually played in a family band because my dad's a guitar player and a singer, and my stepmom plays the drums. And so by the time I was 17, I had been learning how to play bass. So it was just naturally like I got promoted into the family business. And so I started playing in bars when I was 17 and just learning all sorts of just like classic rock songs and old country songs and playing super long gigs at these bars, like from 9 p.m. to 2 in the morning. So like 5-hour long gigs is how I started.
Like straight up working musician since a kid.
Yeah, since high school. And so that's how I got my start. And that's the sort of stuff I'm into. I've never really been into the singer-songwriter stuff, but not until recently. I started listening to guys like Jason Isbell, and John Prine is somebody I've been into a lot lately.
What do you think maybe was the turning point to kind of be like, I need to listen to something a little bit more, maybe toned down, maybe lyrical, maybe?
I think it was just my journey since I moved here was just a whirlwind of change. Because I had moved here with a girlfriend at the time, and only 3 months of having lived here, we broke up, and we had a place, and I had to move out, and so I had just moved to Anchorage. I had nowhere to stay, and so I had called my boss, who, when I had first moved down here, she had offered me a place to stay, and so I've been staying at her house ever since, and she's been a really big influence on me because she's a musician too. Just kind of over this period of time of me trying to, of just healing and trying to figure out my life again, she was just like, hey, there's these guys that really think that you like these, you know, just throwing out songs and stuff. And I just really connected to it. And so that's kind of where this this new singer-songwriter thing kind of started.
I mean, I don't want to make light of your situation, but that sounds like the perfect transition for you to kind of start pouring your heart out there.
It was, yeah. I was not ever really into the whole idea of, like, Dawson Gentlemen or the Dawson Gentlemen band. But because of that, yeah, I just needed an outlet for the emotions I was feeling. And so it was like a matter of, I think it was like, or no, it was only 1 month after my breakup, I had started working on my first album because I was like, hey, I might as well, right? Like I've always wanted to make an album. I never made one. And so I put some money into it, started recording with John. That's how I met John Larson. Nice. And yeah, we made a really cool, like, first album that I just really, really am happy with.
I mean, you recently released an acoustic EP. I think that was back in August.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk about that at all?
Yeah. This was just kind of a direction of me trying to figure out, like, what I want to do with my solo music. And I don't have a band, but for my first album, it was all like full band music. I recorded all the instruments though, but since I didn't have any band to recreate it live, I was playing acoustic all the time. So naturally, I started writing more songs, and I write all of them on my acoustic guitar just by myself. So I was like, well, you know what? How about I try something new here and just try to keep all of the songs all acoustic. And at the same time, I taught myself how to record. And so I recorded this EP all on my own, just on my laptop.
Nice.
At home. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, how have you been liking the maybe more stripped down version of, you know, playing music as opposed to, all right, I got my parents, I got a band, I got, you know, or I've got to play the drums and then I got to lay down the bass and then I'll do guitar. Yeah. Like, how's it been stripping it all away?
It's a love-hate relationship. Yeah. I just really love performing and I think mostly singing. There's just something about just singing in front of a crowd that I really like. Stranger's praise, I guess is what you call it. But no, I just really enjoy just performing. But playing by myself, I enjoy it. I do prefer having a group of friends on stage with me. So, because when it's just me, when I make a mistake, I have nobody to laugh at or joke with. I'm just like, oh boy, that was rough. You know, just talking to myself in my head. But when you got your friends on stage and blah, blah, blah makes a mistake, you know, you can laugh a little bit and be like, that was funny.
Yeah, it's totally. Well, it's kind of like an us against them.
It's
type
an us
of
against
thing,
them, yeah.
Too. Yeah,
yeah, totally. I prefer that over me against them.
Yeah, for real. I guess just kind of, you know, you don't have to get too crazy into it. But I mean, what's been your experience of, you know, really kind of living it up in the Fairbanks music scene to now kind of coming in and kind of incorporating yourself into the Anchorage scene? What's that experience been like?
Well, it makes me laugh hearing living it up in the Fairbanks music scene because it's like, I don't know.
You got the Marlin and...
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, I loved playing at the Marlin for like 5 hours with like, you know, four people watching.
I've done that once and yeah. It was an experience.
Yeah. No, it just with the style of music that I like playing, it's hit or miss trying to get like a decent crowd in Fairbanks. But I think Anchorage, like just because there's more people, it's just, you know, you happen to just go play at places that already have more people there. And so the crowds are a little bit bigger, and I feel like just because of that, because there's more people, there's a little bit more energy at the shows, which I obviously like.
Yeah, it makes it a little bit more fun, right?
Yeah.
Let's talk about you're playing in November. Do you want to talk about that show that you've got coming up in a bit?
Yeah, that is November 2nd. I'm playing at the Writer's Block Cafe. They do a Sunday brunch music event. I think it's every Sunday. Not quite sure about that. But I'm playing there from noon to 2. Yeah, and I'm just going to be doing all of the originals that I have, and then I like throwing in some covers there just so people like know what they're listening to.
Yeah,
right.
Totally.
Yeah.
Well, it sounds like you've also are kind of you've got another band that's been kind of getting stuff going. Sounds like you've been recording stuff. Tell me about Shady Pines Retirement Home.
Yes, man, I love telling people I play in a band called Shady Pines Retirement Home.
It's a great name.
Yeah, because you don't forget it. Yeah, we've been a band since, well, at least since I joined the band was October of last year. So we're still a little baby band, but it's almost been a year. And yeah, we've been playing, played a handful of shows this year, and currently working on our first album. And we have a single coming out here real soon. We're going to be releasing it on Bandcamp on the 4th, and still working out the kinks of getting it released on streaming platforms, but hopefully soon.
Yeah, and this kind of, as this, how would you say that this kind of compares to your current solo output?
Yeah, this is, so I play bass in this band. And which is really fun for me because that's where I started with like playing with my parents as I played bass, and I like to and I do backup vocals as well, and so I really really like the kind of the two roles that I play with my music between my band and my solo stuff is. Solo stuff, I'm obviously the only guitar player, the only music, right? And then I'm the lead singer. But then with Shady Pines, it's a creative. We have everybody in the band has shares their creative opinions, and so it's really fun trying to like work together and trying to put songs together. And then I get to play more of like a supporting role, you know, playing the bass and then doing backup vocals.
Yeah, less pressure too.
Less pressure, yeah. And then you know when I was kind of saying earlier when we were talking a little bit earlier, like when you make a mistake, you know, you just laugh at each other a little bit. Like we don't take ourselves seriously.
Yeah.
At all, and I really really. Enjoy that.
Well, I think people respond to bands that don't take themselves too seriously. Like, if the band's having a good time up on stage, I think people can hear and see that, and that's what matters.
Totally.
Right?
I agree.
All right. Well, so we are fortunate enough to have you here in studio, and you were going to play a song for us, right?
Yeah.
Did you want to talk about the track that we're going to hear in a little bit?
Yeah, so I'm going to be playing my song called Outer Space. That's off of my new EP. And the EP is called 2015. If we have time, I'll talk a little bit about that. It's a kind of an inside joke, 2015, because my friends, most of my friends here in Anchorage now are a few years older than me. Some of them are almost 10 years older than me. And so I'm kind of like the baby of the friend group. And I have this ongoing bit that I tell everyone that I was born in 2015. Which I wasn't. I was born in 2002. But it's just close enough for them that they stop and do the math in their head.
Gonna give you a second look, like,
Yeah, they're like, whoa, 2015, what?
Man, this guy's killing it.
Yeah. It's like, what, you're 10 years old? I love that. But yeah, the song Outer Space, it's not the shortest song on the EP, but it is 2.5 minutes long. It's one of those that when I kind of got the idea and I started writing it, I just didn't want to push it any farther than that. So it is a short song and lyrically one of my favorites, I think.
Awesome. Cool. Well, let's check that out.
Fireflies, end of the day. Tell me someone here knows the way. I'm in line, trembled in fear. I never thought
thought that this would happen here. They say things come and go. Oh, I know, I know, I know. But I miss you so much, dear. Why'd it all have to disappear? Why'd it all have to disappear? Just kept falling like outer space. And all the love she used to see, it burned in the sky, smoke faded like memories. They say things come and go. I know, I know, I know. But I miss you so much, dear. Why'd it all have to disappear? Why'd it all have to disappear?
That was Anchorage musician Dawson Gentleman. His EP called 2015 is out now. And that's all for State of Art. I'm Ammon Swenson.
And that's all for our show. Thanks to my guest, Matthew Burtner. Ammon Swenson produces this show. You can find us at the Hometown Alaska page on alaskapublic.org, the Alaska Public Media app, or wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Dave Waldron, and thanks for listening.
Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. Hometown Alaska's theme song, Lead Dog, is by Kevin Barnett from Eagle River. Learn more about Hometown Alaska and listen online at alaskapublic.org. Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.